All right, now we're recording, I think.
And testing one, two. We have to remember to keep advertising the March 1st March Forward gathering of progressives at the Town Run Brewery. I think that's a Wednesday night from 5:30 to 8 p.m. So that's coming
March
up.
1st. At the town, they're going to be. Originally was talked about as a fair, actually, for
exactly. Yeah. Bring a table, right. Set up literature to about.
Yeah, I think I reserved a table. Okay, we're going to opt to bring it with me and do all that. Yeah, so for the radio, try to get. I'd like to get the vigilance people to do weekly reports if I could. You know, at least while they're cooking.
There's two vigilance groups now. There's Vigilance Shepherdstown and Vigilance Jefferson County.
Well, I don't, whichever one. Yeah.
Both
yeah.
I know they're both active on Facebook. And then there's United and Diverse out of Martinsburg are very active.
These are like Alinsky-style lobbying type things.
These are indivisible.
Yeah. Which is
focused.
I know those.
Exactly.
Right. Effective lobbying, right? Well, I think that's an important thing to do, you know, right now, and keep the pressure on the elected representatives of whatever you can do. That's important. It looks to me, I was talking with a friend yesterday who was quite optimistic about the apparent disarray of the Trump administration, and therefore hopeful that it will fall apart, I suppose. I'm still sort of withholding judgment on that one, although it looks to me like the hit on Mr. Flynn and his connections with Russia show that there's I think all that information and the proof of, what's been wiretapped in conversations and all that other stuff shows that the intelligence community has not submitted to Mr. Trump yet. Mm-hmm. And maybe includes the FBI as well. I'm not quite sure, about that. But certainly the Attorney General and their staff, what's her name, Yates? Sally?
Sally Yates, yeah.
That was quite a courageous act. She actually, mm-hmm. Refused to do the immigration order and was fired for it. But my understanding is that this is having an unbelievable impact among federal workers, okay, across the board, and almost irrespective of their political position in some respects, okay? Mm-hmm. So even though, of course, the reason why Trump and the group are attacking them is because, they're loaded with Democrats, all these institutional people, right? And whether it's true or not, it doesn't matter. I mean, they're... This is where I came up, where I heard, my wife said, what's the most common thing you're hearing? Is this, I can't sleep.
Wow. Okay.
Worried about their jobs, their careers, right, their country, right, their whatevers, right, everything, right? And whether they're going to be asked to do something, completely unprincipled, and even within the rules of the State Department, right, or the EPA or Labor Department. You have an anti-labor... this looks like our friend.
Yep, probably is.
Good morning. This is Epic Radio, and this must be Dr. Leslie Beth Wish.
You are right. Good morning. This must be John.
Yes, I am John Case, and of course with me is Dr. Zaki McGill.
Good morning, LB.
Good morning, John and Dr. Zaki.
And Zaki is, being in the prime of life here, is taking on... enough responsibility in our community to where soon he's either going to become a target for some hit squad around the country, or he's going to become president of the United States. And I'm hoping the latter is.
Often the same thing.
Yes, I guess it is.
I will share that someone at the NAACP meeting last night, a British-born fellow, said he wanted to draft me for mayor, to run for mayor.
There you go. Yeah, right. Okay.
He moved over here from D.C. and he said, I've been involved in a lot of this kind of stuff. He said, we could do this. We could do it.
Yeah.
I said, Ian, I'm not qualified. I'm not qualified. Would you say, LB?
Did that entice you at all?
No.
Yeah. See, that's the statement. That's the statement of a future president, is it not, Dr. Wish? You know, I just ask you.
Now, tell me, Don, would you like to run for some kind of office?
Me?
Like a major office? Yes.
Not at this point, no. You know, earlier I might have, okay, if I'd figured things out a little sooner. Now I'm, I got just too much there that would be, I might run for local office. You know, I wouldn't mind running, local office, but nothing, you know, I don't want to play. You got to have a lot of energy to play that game, and, you know, you got to play it serious if you want to go out. And even at the local level, it's not a trivial matter.
You got to like public speaking, and I'm an extroverted introvert.
Yeah,
it's like I do it because I have to, but I don't relish it.
Well, I mean, real governing is different than campaigning. Okay,
true.
And campaigning and agitation are sort of one thing.
They come first.
They come first, and but actually, governing is a different art. I mean, it's not totally disconnected, but it's quite different. And so,
but you can't get to the governing part until you do the campaign.
That's
part.
True. No, you have to. Really right, you have to.
You've got to be a good campaigner.
You got to spin the narrative. Yeah, and the narrative has to have a positive outcome.
Yes, definitely. You know, my mother's side, the family in South Carolina, were very involved in politics, so I learned about state and national and local politics early. And all I could think about was, what an act these people have. The front of them and then the back of them.
Yeah, right.
And, oh, my goodness. What two different worlds, two different beings.
Yeah.
Interesting, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you got to. I was so just charmed by, Jerry Brown's thing about when he was talking to the scientist out there in California about how your job is to tell the truth. The politics, you just leave that one to me. I'm really good at it, you know. It's a nasty business. I happen to think it's a lot of fun, and I'm really good at it. So don't you worry. You tell the truth. I'll worry about the politics.
Nice. I bet they'd love that.
I have no stomach for that. I have met so many politicians in person, as well as where I went to college undergrad, had a lot of children of movie stars and directors and things.
Uh-huh.
So at Parents Day, a lot of the parents would come and they'd make a big entry in their limousines and everything. And you'd meet these people up front and you go, what a jerk.
It's all about me.
And a very
yeah.
well-known moving forward, our daughter went to a private day school in the Boston area. And at graduation day, one of the parents of one of the children came. It's a very well-known person, so we'll leave the person's name.
Yeah, out, okay,
but
right.
Came in a limo, okay?
Right.
And this was a married man, and he comes out of the limo, and this is for a middle school graduation now. I want to
oh,
give you
God,
a
I can just hear this coming.
Only went up to eighth grade or ninth, or something like that. And out of the back of the limo come five women in those satin hot pants and tight
oh my God!
To a high school, middle school graduation.
Right.
I mean, so, you know, that was quite interesting.
Yeah.
I've seen things from up close with my family, entertaining different centers and things like that on my mother's side, all the way to the backroom dealings of local politics. And
right.
the one lesson I learned from it is, throw your ethics out the window, otherwise you'll never make it.
Ooh.
Wow.
That's true. All the time. It's always compromise. I'll vote for your bill if you vote for my bill. I don't really like your bill, but if you vote for my bill, I'll support you. If you support me, I'm running for dog catcher. Well, I don't think you're a good dog catcher, but if you're going to help me, then I'll support you for dog catcher. I mean, it was just, I have no stomach for that. I could never do it.
Well, it's a but even so, even with all the sausage making and compromising that has to happen, some people seem to become wise out of it, and others become soiled. It's odd that you could have even though it's you have two different people wallowing around in what might be called a sewer in some respects, Still, some can get through it with a measure of dignity, and others seem to get overwhelmed. But
yes, and I think one of the things that is so distressing, and I think this goes back to what often happens on a more personal, intimate level when you're choosing a potential love partner, is that what you see is often not what you get. Think of all the upstanding politicians who, you know, had, you know, promoted good causes and seemed really good leaders, and then you find out that they've, you know, had a terrible personal life in terms of affairs, yeah, and drinking and drugs and backroom, right, you know, illegal, you know, financial trades. And so what that does, because we're talking about stress today, you know, that's happening above your head at a high level way over there.
Right.
But it does get into your mind and into your emotions that says something like this: can I really trust this person? And so it becomes, you know, another layer of stress.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, well, I was going to, one of my topic of interest today, which I really was interested in, it comes from my wife, okay, who is, of course, works for the National Science Foundation and has worked for Bureau of Economic Analysis before then. She's an economist and works with a lot of professional and semi-professional people in Washington, federal workers. And I was in the midst of all this sort of rather chaotic first 20-some days of the Trump administration, and I was asking her, well, what's the most common thing that you hear? And she says, I can't sleep. Because there's so much disarray and confusion at work, and whether you're going to have a job or not have a job, or whether you're going to be asked to do something you think is unprofessional, or whether you're going to be intimidated in some respect, or just all the, you know, and the appearance of, you know, chaos at the top, right, is. And in certain senses, these outrage, these things that are outrageous to, you know, federal employees, like being asked to do something that you think is illegal, that kind of thing. It's interesting. But now the question of lost sleep. Now, I wasn't sleeping that well before the election. Okay, so I can't blame mine on that. But I had this problem too recently, last year or so, mostly. Maybe it's just age, or, you know, getting old, or potential prostate issues, God knows what, right? But I get up at 2 o'clock, and I had for a number of years, just, you know, to take care of business. But now I have a hard time going back to sleep afterwards, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'd toss and turn, and then I'd find out that my wife was also awake. Maybe it was because of me, so the question of sleeplessness, lost sleep. You guys are, you must deal with this all the time in your different capacities and with different patients. And what do you got to say about this? Sleep, because,
well,
a lot of things can cause
sleep. Most people at some point in their life have a sleep disorder, whether it's short term over what you're talking about. You mentioned some of the top issues when you were talking about your wife. So being worried about you're going to lose your job, that's something to be very, you know, sleepless about. That does create worry. Being intimidated and mistreated at work, having a boss who chases you around the desk, you know, the cartoon of that all the time, that's something to worry about. And also whether you're going to be able to function at your job in an ethical way, whether you're going to be asked to do things that you don't want to do, don't like, or beyond your scope, or you find are, you know, sort of compromising your values. All those kinds of issues are just one of many that can create sleeplessness. Again, sleeplessness can be caused by two main things. These aren't the only things, but two main things. One is life stress, for sure, and the other are physical, you know, problems. So I always like to start with get yourself checked out, you know, by a medical physician. So find out if there's anything wrong. You know, are you having apnea? Is there an abscess you're having in your tooth? Are you having allergy problems? Are you having reflux Are you in pain? You know, don't jump right. automatically to thinking that it's something psychological.
Right.
Because that festers too. You know, there's something wrong with me. I've lost control of my life. Why can't I go back to sleep? When my husband and I had the clinic in the Boston area, it was called the New England Institute of Family Relations. And although we treated all kinds of problems, our main identity in the community was to treat sexual dysfunction. So
right.
people would come to see us. And
were you a Dr. Ruth way back when?
No. But we were trained in the Masters and Johnson. My husband, you know, met them, and we were trained, you know, with that approach. But no surrogates, though. No surrogates. No surrogates. Absolutely not. And that would be the first question people would ask us. Do I have to have sex with a stranger? And, you know, the joke was, not unless you want to. But no, we never did that. But anyway.
Well, you know joking aside, let me just put that in. I did have a friend once who used a sexual surrogate. It was absolutely necessary and it worked. So, you know, I don't want people to walk away feeling we disparaged, you know, the whole sex ed, sex dysfunction treatment industry, because they do serve a purpose.
You're absolutely right. There are people who, there was one man we knew, we didn't treat him at this stage in his issue, but he had a surrogate. He had never had sex, was petrified. He couldn't get an erection on his own through, you know, self-pleasuring or anything like that, and he was really scared. And he went into a clinic that used surrogates, and it gave him confidence that he could perform. But there were so many ethical issues involved in that, and Masters and Johnson had so much, you know, negative feedback. We did not at the Institute use any surrogates because we didn't want to get involved with anything like that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But
right.
it was, you know, very difficult. But what we did, the first thing we did when people would come to see us was we made sure that they saw a gynecologist, a urologist, their internal medicine doctor, to make sure that there were no physical causes. Because you can really torture yourself psychologically and emotionally thinking that it's all your fault and you can't control it. So you have to get rid of that. Go get yourself checked out first with various, whatever your doctor recommends, when you have sleep disorder problems, because it may not just be stress. It might be something that can be easily corrected. There were a lot of people that came to see us at the Institute who main problem was they were just too exhausted. They worked long shifts at hospitals, had another part-time job. You know, all you want to do is go to sleep. The idea of being sexually aroused doesn't even cross your mind. Just show me my couch, bed, anything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you really have to look at the whole person, you know. So it's very important that you do that for yourself. But having said all that, the things that you're talking about, John, with your wife, yes, that would make you sleepless at night. That's one of the many things. And there's so many other things that do worry about your health, your children, your job,
yeah,
a project, all those things.
What about sleep aids, for example? Now I occasionally, if it gets too much of a problem for me, like I'll take an Excedrin PM or something like that, and that's all. It just takes one of those, and frankly, that does work for me. But I don't like the idea of taking one every night and all that. So, and I don't, you know. So I sort of let sleeplessness accumulate occasionally.
When you take those, John, do you wake up groggy or refreshed?
If I get less than, it depends. If I have less than 8 hours to sleep, like, you know, then I wake up groggy. Okay. If I have a solid 8 hours, I'm okay. Yeah. I'm okay. Yeah. So, but
here's the guidelines for sleep. This is important. You know, people have different needs for how many hours of sleep, and it does change somewhat with age, but not in everyone. Think about that. How can one concept, like one of the myths out there, is that older people have to take naps and they need less sleep and they sleep less? Well, that might not be true for you on the individual level. So learn what your body needs.
Right.
Very important, because you might be the exception. You might be just like the mainstream, but you might have to tweak what your needs are. I don't need a lot of sleep. Some people need a lot more. I don't. I go to bed late, wake up early. But that's me. That's my body. You have to know who you are. So get rid of those rules, for starters. You know, use it as guidelines. And then sleep aids. You know, that is a very individual issue also. My brother and my dad and I, we all seem to have the same immune reactions and the same sensitivities in our bodies. I've never taken a sleep aid, but I know that my dad and my brother did, and they couldn't wake up from it. So I knew if I ever needed one, I was just going to go get up and do something, you know, like
supposed to take that. Now, what about this drug? I heard there's something, or maybe it's an herb or some kind of melatonin. Does that ring a bell?
Mm-hmm, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm,
That's widely used, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And some it works for some people, it doesn't work for others. I, you know, individually have a paradoxical effect from it. It makes me feel wired, like I've taken an amphetamine.
Oh, weird. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So again, like Dr. Wish is saying, it's really individual. And if you're having, you know, a protracted sleep problem, you really need to get in with somebody that can evaluate the total picture.
Right.
I'm so glad you said that. No, that's so important, Dr. Zaki. It's so important. Don't jump quickly to self-medication. Really don't. Because the idea of taking a pill to put you to sleep, but all it does is agitate you. And as you said, it's called a paradoxical experience. That's exactly what I have to those things, to a lot of medications.
Right.
You know, don't medicate yourself. Go get help, because you can really get yourself into trouble. And don't compare yourself to other people. Well, my cousin takes this and it works for her. you know, your body chemistry and your genetics and everything else are uniquely you. So why would you want to follow someone else's routine? You know, go get, as you say, good, solid workup. Find out what's going on in you.
What about meditation? I have friends that say that that if they meditate, that they sleep better. Does that ring a bell?
That's true for me.
Lot.
I'm a meditator, so yeah, I meditate twice a day. And when I'm doing it consistently, yeah, I do sleep better. When I start skipping,
that's a good example. That works for Dr. Zaki. That would never work for me, and it may not work for other people. Again. Listen to what other people say and do and recommend, but experiment on your own. You know, meditation is a great way for many people to relax and get centered,
right,
and to get rid of their anxieties or fears or you know, their preoccupations with things that stay in your head. Oh, my God, I got to do this. I got to do this. I didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's different. Some people are more prone to worrying.
Right.
Some people need more relaxation. It just depends. You know, you have to know you. That is one of your prime responsibilities on this planet. Know you. Know what you need. Know where your weaknesses are. Take care of yourself, because no matter what your causes or interests are, if you're not in good health, then you can't do those other things.
You know, Dr. Wish, I want us to start giving our listeners, you know, some of the basic steps of sleep hygiene. But before we get to that, you know, I just want to throw in that one thing that I find among my clients and also myself is this just sleep anxiety, like the anxiety that you're not going to sleep, which feeds on itself, which creates more sleeplessness. And also this attitude of, I just want to sleep. You know, I don't want to have to go through all of these steps or, you know, the warm bath or turning down the lights or turning off the cell phone or the computer or the TV. You know, I just want to sleep. And I think that's a major sort of emotional, psychological trap that people need to look out for, that there really are very good basic ways to improve your sleep hygiene. But you have to invest in it. It really can't be about, I just want to sleep. I'm gonna take a melatonin. I'm gonna take an Ambien. I just want to knock out. Because it doesn't always work, and the consequences can be disastrous. I mean, you can get easily addicted on sleep pills very quickly.
I've seen that happen to people, yeah.
Well, everything you've said is so wise. Again, you know, don't self-medicate. Don't take other people's medicines. You know, there's always a friend or a cousin that says, here's my Ambien. Just try it and see what you think. Ambien is so addicting. It is a very potent medication.
Absolutely.
Now I also, for example, we have right down half block from here, there's a little place called, it's called the Tonic Shop, I think. And it's run by a couple of people that that would tell you that there's an herbal or natural or homeopathy or a Chinese medical remedy for all of these matters. Well, for a lot of them. And so just the right sort of potion or tea can set you up just right for sleeping well. And these are widely held practices and beliefs. I mean, I don't know whether any two homeopaths agree exactly on any particular, or maybe they do, but nonetheless, there's a little cottage industry, certainly in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, that's totally kind of into these kinds of methods. What's your guys' commentary on that?
Well, Dr. Zaki asked me to talk about good sleep hygiene, and that fits right into it. Is it true that some of those Chinese and alternative medicines work? Well, of course, for some, but again, think about this. Think of how unique your body is, your immune system response, what other medications you're on. Do you really want to take another pill or rub in another salve somewhere and you don't know how it interacts with all the other things that you're doing and pills that you're taking and medications that you do need? Again, don't play doctor to yourself. You know, go find out from a physician, whatever, you know, someone who can help you understand whether this is good for you or not. So that's number one. Number two, again, don't take someone else's medication. It's very common amongst families, especially, you know, here, I'll give you a few pills to take with you. You know, don't do that. You have no idea dosage or whether it interferes with what you're taking or how your body reacts. Next, get a good family doctor, your good internal medicine. Get someone who tracks you, knows you, someone who you can go to and trust. And it takes time to find someone good. I think I went through about 3 or 4 different, you know, internal medicine doctors here in town to find someone who was open to alternative but also had traditional medical training. And that took a while to find that person. So I really trust my physician now because he knows from a full spectrum as to what kinds of things work for me. So that's what you need to do. It's called taking responsibility. And that all goes into working on your sleep hygiene. Other things that are recommended are, in general, you can't do this all the time. So don't go nuts if you can't do it every night. But try to go to bed at the same time and wake up at the same time. I know there are always exceptions, but try that. And if your partner, you know, makes a whole lot of noise snoring or has to get up, have him or her go in the other room. You know, you need a good night's sleep too, you know. That's not music. That's annoying, you know.
Earplugs.
Yes, earplugs if you like them. Some people don't. And the one thing I learned from experience and from my clients is that if you really can't sleep, one of the things that you should not do is turn on a light. It's the light that interferes with your sleep cycle. So lie there and think about your favorite movies. Don't think about what you have to do tomorrow. Don't do that. But think about something happy. Whatever you've got happy coming up, think about that. Get yourself into a happy mode. And meditation, this is a good spot where meditation can work. So, and if you really, really can't sleep and really can't work, do that. Some people have music that they listen to, but it's very important you don't turn on lights. That seems to interfere with the awake sleep cycle.
Especially the computer or your cell phone. Because of the backlight.
Now, I heard Hulk Hogan once expound on this matter.
Okay.
In an interview on one of the late nights. I forget remember who. Anyway, and he was they were. He said he had had a terrible sleep problem, and because some other guest right before him had been talking about his or her sleep problem, and he said that he had a simple solution for sleep problems, and of course everyone waited. What was that, Hulk? And he says, "Well, I have an entire gym downstairs in the basement. I just go down and I just start hanging and banging heavy weights. It takes about 40 minutes and I'm back asleep."
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's really attractive in the middle of the night. I'm going to get up and go throw weights around. Yeah. You know, Dr. Wish, I wanted to add about a warm shower or warm soak in the tub.
Yeah.
There are some studies coming out that because that causes peripheral blood flow, that it lowers the core temperature of the body and does help to promote sleep and relaxation.
That's really good. Yes, that's I absolutely. You know, there's nothing like a warm shower. The other thing you can do is turn the temperature down in your bedroom. You want to make it a little bit colder.
Absolutely.
Not only does that help promote sleep, but also helps promote weight loss a little bit because your body has to start generating heat. And other things, and this, again, is one of those things that can work for you or against you, okay? Sex before you go to sleep. People go to sleep afterwards, or for other people, it makes them more wide awake. So, again, it's what your body does.
Do you like to smoke afterwards?
A joint?
Now, you can't recommend that.
No.
Well, when I was in California, I could.
Yeah, there you go.
That's right.
Anyway.
Do you have medicinal marijuana in West Virginia?
Not yet.
Maryland, right across the river, though. So. Does, yeah.
Oh, in Maryland they do? Mm-hmm.
Well, matter of fact, I think they set up 10 different farms, legal farms. There was actually a fairly almost a carnival political atmosphere in Hagerstown as bidders on who should build the marijuana farm in town, since they had been designated as one of the towns that was going to get a, you know, it was a 10 or I can't remember whether it was $10 or $100 million project. It's a big deal, okay? And there's got to be security, and it's got to be indoors, and you know. But it was 150 jobs, you know.
Wow!
That's a huge project. Oh my goodness!
Big project, yeah. Well, they're going to have 10 of them around the state, and it's going to supply the legal medical weed that medical marijuana was passed in Maryland. Okay, so. Right. That's part of the business of setting it up and everything. But
wow.
Yeah.
Anyway. Oh, it's big business. Yeah, it's huge.
Oh, yeah, it's going to. Yeah. Well, interesting, the two poorest states, West Virginia and Mississippi, will be the last, I guess, because their political act is just so tangled up in blue. Was that the old Bob Dylan song? they can't seem to
Good
get
one.
It together.
Yeah.
They can't get it together to get their budget done. They just can't get it done. Anyway. But.
Well, another thing that people can do, a very important thing, and I practice this, I would say, almost all the time, because nothing's all the time, almost all the time. Before you end whatever you're doing for the day, you know, projects or bills or whatever, try to end on something that for the next day is easy to start up on. And whatever that is, what's easy for one person is not easy for another. That way, you don't go to sleep dreading right away what you have to do the next day, and you don't get up the next morning procrastinating. Make it something easy. Because what happens is, once you get going, then the going gets easier. So when you start with something that is easy and somewhat routine or even enjoyable, then the other things you start down that road of activity and feeling good and confident and competent. And it varies for some people. I like to work out in the morning. Other people would say, oh God, I hate working out. I dread it. And then the last thing is, don't go and do these things alone, like taking, you know, a new kind of like sleep aid. Try to let someone know you're doing it, particularly if you live alone.
That's a good idea.
Because if you have any kind of reaction, have a good friend or whoever you've got give you a call, check in with you, anything, so that, or let them know that if something goes awry and you've got a bad reaction, that you can call them, or that signal, anything. Try not to isolate yourself.
Those are all good. I think those are great. They're all great points that you know, if you had, we could...
You know, I want to throw in something else. Yeah, those are all good points. For people who absolutely are addicted to their electronics, there is a device. There are orange filter glasses that you can buy. They even have them in the drugstores now, or you can order them on online. But you'll see. It's a pretty deep orange lens, and you can put it over your reading glasses. You can get them big enough to put over your reading glasses, or if you don't need reading glasses, you're lucky enough. You're not old like us farts. What it does, it filters out the intense blue light from the computer screen and your cell phone, which that intense light activates your wake system in your brain. And that's why... We really recommend people turn off the electronics at least an hour before you want to go to bed. Now, again, it's individual. I mean, I have a very close friend who she has to fall asleep in front of a TV. She said that's her, it sort of focuses her mind just watching something, that's pleasant or inane.
Oh, for years, Carol and I, when we had a TV in the bedroom, we would fall asleep and never make it through an entire episode of Law and Order.
Right.
I
do think that TV screens are less, well, they used to be less intense light than what we're receiving from our computers and smartphones now.
So computers and smartphones are mostly LED screens, okay?
Okay.
And
right.
And the old CRTs were cathode ray tubes.
Okay, I remember that my dad opening up the back of the TV and replacing them.
Yes, it looks so strange in there, doesn't it? It's so strange.
I know. Nobody knows. You probably find a lot of kids don't even know what that is now, but amazing,
It was amazing.
70 years of time. The lifespan of technologies just keeps, or at least so many of them, just keeps getting shorter and shorter.
The problem with going to sleep to the TV is who turns it off? Does it wake you up in the middle of the night?
Yes, if you leave it on.
I used to have a TV where you could set a timer, it would shut off.
Oh, that's a great idea.
That was neat. Yeah.
Can you still do that with a TV? Ruining everything and losing your channels.
I don't have a TV in my bedroom anymore. There's one TV in the entertainment room, and that's it in my house because I don't want to be.
Yeah, we don't have
TV.
One. We don't have one we were thinking of relocating one into the bedroom.
Were you?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think Carol likes it. I mean, she likes to get in bed like an hour before sleep and use it and wind down that way. Even without the TV, she'll look at her tablet or something like that, or watch Netflix or something on. Do something like that, right? Sometimes, so. Whereas me, when I get in bed, I'll try to read a book. But these days, 5 minutes after I start reading, I'm ready to turn the light. I'm gone. I'm ready to.
There you go. That's right. Read. Exactly. And the light's on. So, but that screen you're talking about, Dr. Zaki, that sounds really good.
Yeah. The orange lenses. Reading is absolutely my sleeping pill. My go-to sleeping pill. Yeah, warm shower, a soak in the tub, climb in the bed, put on my reading light, and I can't get through a chapter.
Don't you remember a time, though, when, a good book would, keep you up, right?
Occasionally, that's true.
What
was the name of the last book that did that to you?
It's been a while.
I can name it.
Lonesome Dove.
Lonesome Dove.
Okay. When I first read it, I stayed up all night reading.
It was in the Kingdom of Ice, the tragic journey of the USS Jeanette.
That kept Carol up. That's the one that kept her
really,
up.
Yeah, yes. I could not put that book down. Dr. Wish, what was your Keep Me Up in the Night book?
Well, most recently, I have it in the other room, so I can't read the exact title, but it was O'Reilly's book on the end of World War II and the Japanese and Truman. That I couldn't put that down. I learned so much by reading that book. I just couldn't. I just kept turning the pages, and I think I read the whole thing in two nights.
Wow.
Well, see, there you go.
I liked anything. I like everything about World War II. I'm looking at my bookshelf right now. I have so many things on World War II.
Was someone in your family a vet?
I find it fascinating.
Did you have a vet? Was somebody in your family a veteran?
My dad was.
Oh, your dad was a veteran. Okay.
Yeah, he came in on the Battle of the Bulge.
Oh, wow.
My uncle was in the Battle of the Bulge, born and raised in Charlestown, yeah. West Virginia.
That was a really scary time. He told us stories about my mother was a child bride. My dad was like 11 years older than she, and so he was, you know, he was a physician and was sent very early, you know, to, he started out in internal medicine and then ended up in psychiatry. And so he was on the battlefield with, you know, helping. In those days, they didn't call it PTSD. It was called shell shock, battle fatigue.
Yeah.
But he came in on the gliders, and he has all these four or five silk maps of the landing fields, you know, showing where the secret landing fields were, and a lot of stories about it. So I'm that, and just in general, I think the appeal to me about World War II from the advantage or the vantage point of an American citizen is that I think it was one of the only times in our history that our whole country came together just about.
Right. I think that's true. I mean, it was a mobilization we haven't seen in
ever
since
again.
Then, that's for sure.
I mean, even the American Revolution, there were loyalists. The Civil War obviously was, I mean, that divided the whole country. Vietnam divided the country. And yes, I'm sure there were some people who were opposed to anything with World War II, but...
Yeah, Lindbergh.
Everybody was really, yes.
Well, yeah, it was overwhelming. But it was overwhelming. You're right. No, I mean...
Yeah,
no,
I mean, it was just... And there's a wonderful book by David Brinkley called Washington Goes to War. You can get it, like, in rare bookshops and maybe used one. I couldn't put that one down. It was... how suddenly the United States, you know, was going to war, although they knew it was coming anyway, but they had to get lots of people to work in administrative positions in Washington. And in those days, they didn't use the word administrative. They used the word secretary.
Yeah.
So legions of women were brought into Washington with no place to live.
That was my mother.
They had to find housing. It was a fascinating book.
Oh, yeah. That was huge. Now, my dad, you know, had a withered left arm and leg, you know, so he didn't serve except in the War Production Board. But my grandfather was my mother's side was a submariner in World War One, which is, we said, well, when it went down, it was a gambling proposition whether it would come back up again.
Wow.
You know, anyway, but I thought it was kind of, and he used to tell, you know, like, I think when you're young and you hear, you know, your family stories and of wartime, especially, it has a pretty big mythological kind of impact on your spirit. I think it does. It really does. So I, for example, I'm still addicted to this day to submarine movies.
I love submarine.
You
I've
know,
seen The Hunt for Red October at least four times.
Oh yeah, that one. I mean, I've seen. I mean, I found on YouTube free. Full movie downloads of like three World War II submarine flicks, right? One with Bogart and one with Cary Grant, and and then of course I downloaded something that looked like a submarine movie, but actually it was a farce called Up Periscope or Down Periscope, which was Kelsey Grammer, a funny film, you know. I usually call that sort of a stoner film, but anyway, it's if a submarine thing comes out, I mean, I attribute it to, you know, the importance of that early narrative, maybe. I don't.
I just find anything about World War II fascinating. That kind of bravery. I have no physical bravery, not zero, and I'm just so impressed that people could do that. And being in a submarine, I the anxiety of being underwater like that, there's no way I could handle that.
Yeah, you would perform fine. So it's impressed. Always the people that are. You know, I learned this from Strike Struggles, Dr. Wish. Okay, is that the people who especially women who acted like they were terrified of a strike. Once the strike actually began, they became the soldiers of the struggle. They kept it going. They kept all the details going, all this and that, you know. And so I'm sure you would perform fine on a submarine. If they just let you in, I understand from Kelsey Grammer that they didn't used to let women on submarines. But
yeah, I John, I agree with you. I think in this present moment of struggle and resistance and protest, people are finding the courage they didn't think they possessed.
Right.
You know, and in that march in Washington, I mean, I saw elderly people with walkers, and you know, my next door neighbor who'd never been to a protest in her life and is an avowed recluse, found the courage to come out. And so I agree with you. I think were we together at the beginning of World War II, we would have found the gumption to get involved.
You know, that's a good point. I'm so glad you said that, because you used a word that is so critical, the word motivation. And going back to what we were talking about initially about sleep disorders and, you know, how you get to sleep and sleep problems, find something that motivates you, that is personally important to you, to take care of yourself, to take responsibility for your sleep hygiene, so that you can feel that you're in charge of your life. And it could be anything. I know for me, I mean, I lost my mother young, just recently, a childhood friend, literally, I've known her from birth. She just died. She's young. I have a friend who died several years ago, even younger than my mother. My mother died at 48, which in today's world is really young. And think about what motivates you. I mean, I'm so grateful to be alive that I don't want to waste my time on anxiety or worry. Just get up and do something. Whatever it is, so find something that motivates you. It could be anything. It doesn't matter. It could be a self-reward. If I do this, I get to watch this TV show, or I get to make this phone call, or I get to go buy something or watch a submarine movie. Take charge. Set up something that motivates you, and it's unique to everyone. So I love that you use that word.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I also want to give a plug to my yoga friends who really believe in yogic breathing techniques. That's easy to look up online. But one of the simple ones that they promote for middle of the night waking is, you know, closing one of your nostrils with your finger. Take a deep breath in through the other nostril, and then blow out through your mouth, and then alternate, close the other nostril. And I've actually tried this, and it works well. And you keep doing that, alternating each nostril, breathing in deep, then blowing out through your mouth until you start to yawn. And you really can, you know, I hope it works for some others other than me, but the yogis promote this as a sleep benefit as well. I mean, you could try it, you know, when you're trying to initiate sleep as well. I think what works is, besides the deep breathing, which has a physiological effect on your lungs and your brain and helps you to relax, I think it also focuses your mind away from chatter and anxious thoughts and so forth. So it gives your mind something else to do other than worry about not going to sleep.
Well, also what it does is, there's another technique that has the same effect that you can use. It has to do with the meridians in your body and your energy. So another thing that will produce yawning, that the nose, what you recommended, can work. The other thing you could do is find those knobby little bones that stick out from your collarbone, you know, like on either side of your throat.
Uh-huh,
you know what I'm talking about?
Uh-huh. Your clavicle?
Those little knobby things on your clavicle, yeah. So take your tips of your fingers and kind of tap on that, on both sides, on that knobby protrusion about 10 to 20 times. Not, don't pound yourself, but, you know, kind of tap on it.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is it engages the meridian that has to do with your kidneys and clearing your body of substances and working hard to purify you.
Mm-hmm.
And what will induce is yawning.
Interesting.
And help sleep. Same idea as the nose.
Okay, I'm
going to
try.
Interesting.
Good tip.
But again, this may not work for everyone.
Right.
And that goes back to the idea of taking responsibility. As you say, Dr. Zaki, your sleep hygiene, very, very important to do that. And all these things are stress busters. And don't listen to one person that says this worked for me, do it. Well, try it, and try it more than once, because it takes a little time. And then if it doesn't work, find something else. It doesn't mean you failed. It doesn't mean to give up.
Right.
Be careful of the little blue pill. Yeah.
Yeah. No, seriously. You know, when I was going through a divorce, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit this. I got addicted to sleeping pills. And because I just wanted something to knock me out so I didn't have to think about anything. And it got so bad, I was taking a cocktail of three different sleeping pills. And I tell you, you know, yeah, it was dangerous. And, you know, I'm lucky to be alive on the other side of this. And it took a long time to wean myself off of all that.
Right.
So
that's
yeah.
a good warning story.
Yeah.
That is, I thank you for telling people that, because those pills are very dangerous. They're very powerful.
Well, the over-the-counter drugs that you can get are you know, it's just it's stunning what people can make out of them. I mean, you have factories now made up of over-the-counter drug components, right?
So, true.
you know how they make the meth, like Excedrin PMs
and all that.
You know, and all that.
I'm glad you said that, because you know what? People in their mind say, if I can buy it at Walgreens or CVS or Rite Aid or wherever, Walmart, then it can't be that bad. It couldn't be as strong as a prescription, so I must be okay taking this.
Right.
And boy, you got to be real careful with those too.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're right. For example, I mean, I remember in the eternal search for the cold medication that will get you through the cold best, right? You know, I tend to choose the ones that make you go to sleep, right, or NyQuil or type thing.
Right.
But all it takes is like two nights worth of NyQuil, and I can tell that I'm being poisoned.
Really?
I mean, I feel like I'm being poisoned. It's you know, and I have to stop. Yeah, I just feels like, you know, there's something. This is I might as well have gone down and. In a mine and drinking some liquid metal of some sort, you know. I just it feels like I'm I might get rid of the cold, but I'll probably get cancer as a result or something like that.
Do you feel like you're not you, or that your body's not you? I mean,
At a certain point, for example, it doesn't provide the sleep aid, right? If I do it like two nights, I can get about two nights worth of sleep and decongestion combined there to be able to, you know, make it through to morning. And if I do that, that helps get rid of the cold. That helps, you know, endure and, you know, pass through the cold. Get some rest. But if I do it more than two nights, the third night I have to do it, for example, I won't go to sleep. All right, I might not, or I'll wake up quickly, or I won't really, you know, and you'll be tempted to take another swallow of the stuff, right? And
yeah, I've forgotten what's in those things. I'm wondering if there's aluminum. There is aluminum in a lot of that stuff, but I also want to give another plug to acupuncture and Chinese herbs, because that helped me to wean off of the addictive sleep aids, the pharmaceuticals. I know there are as you were referring to the meridian, there are meridians that the acupuncturists use to help with sleep.
Yeah. Yes.
Sleep and relaxation.
That's really good advice.
You're listening hold on 1 second. You're listening to Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Dr. Leslie Beth Wish from Florida, and her website is lovevictory.com. And she's been a frequent guest on our program, and we love having her. We love talking to her. We all learn a lot. And Dr. Zaki McGill here, who's a regular host of this program. And so I just want to do that little station ID before we get into our last five or so minutes here.
thank you for doing that.
Go ahead.
I really appreciate that. You said something, you've all said something important. There's so many places to go here, but I really like the idea of trying different ways, like you're mentioning acupuncture. Try them, because if you don't get enough sleep, boy, that impairs your immune system, your mood, your functioning. I mean, it's so powerful. Your healing, weight loss, all that has to do with getting a good sleep regimen. Very, very important.
No,
One thing.
Go ahead.
You've heard this a million times. Don't go to bed angry with your partner or your kids. Calm it down.
Yeah. If you go to bed angry with your partner and you don't repair that, you know, your marriage is in trouble.
Mm.
Big time.
It is. It's in big time trouble. And and you're about to enter, you know, a zone where it's just miserable. Okay.
You know, there's a I have an applique on the a powder room wall that says "Always kiss me goodnight," and I will admit that there have been times when, I had to wait till my spouse fell asleep and then kiss them on the head for it. But there was something else I was thinking of, the acupuncture, the Chinese herbs. Gosh, it slipped my mind.
Okay, well, before we get off, one last thing I was going to ask you guys. Dreams, people that wake up scared to death of what they've dreamt, like a nightmare. Mm. Is that a different category of issue, or is that related? I mean, I'm sure it's related to some of the other matters we've discussed, but...
There's a range. I mean, there's something as extreme as what we call night terrors. That like children.
Yeah, a friend of mine's child had that. Yeah, it was terrible. Yeah.
But you want to weigh in, Dr. Wish? Any thoughts?
Yes, there are a lot of reasons for having, you know, scary dreams. You know, don't go watch a scary movie before you go to bed.
Thank you.
Read a scary book before you
No Game of Thrones for me.
That's right. I mean, you know, calm it down, because those shows and movies have a way of getting right into your mind, and you do recreate them sometimes in your sleep. So, you know, don't do that. Try something happy. Try something that makes you laugh or feel good. I don't even recommend watching the evening news or the late news before you go to sleep.
Me neither.
It's all rehashed anyway. No, I'm really serious.
I know you are. Yes.
How many times can you listen to all these channels and there's all these talking heads that are talking about the same issue and maybe get a phrase in that's unique to them? You know, turn it off. Really, turn it off. Find something pleasant. People with post-traumatic stress disorders are very prone to having night terrors and bad dreams. Calm it down. And again, if you have that in your life, go get some help with that. There's a lot of ways of managing that, including meditation. Make sure you've got someone you can call when you wake up.
Right.
Whether if you don't have a partner in the home or a friend, you know, don't do those scary things by yourself.
Right.
I agree.
Because you can wake up and, you know, it takes you 15 minutes to realize it was a dream.
Exactly.
And then what? And then you're still in the dream. And you're still, it can be.
My experience is being in one of those dreams and thinking, why the hell are you dreaming about this? This is ridiculous, you know.
I know, right. I know, right. But those conversations don't go anywhere in the dream. They just hang there. Anyway. Well, listen, Dr. Wish, we're at the witching hour here, maybe that's bad word to use.
Happy hour.
I've been doing pretty good. I've been getting the podcast up here now, so I'll get it up and send you a link to it of our conversation today. I think people are interested in the sleep issue, and
absolutely,
we'll be able to tell by the number of downloads, I suppose, but or views. But in any event, it's always there, and we probably ought to get some. I should have the tonic shop people come in and talk about sleep. That'd be good.
Yeah, that would be fun.
What's her name? Can't remember her name.
It's
a major disorder. Uh-huh. You know, the way you find out what people need is go to your local pharmacy, you know, or that section in Walmart or whatever, and look at how many choices of sleep aids there are.
Right.
Example.
I know what it was.
Tells you.
Yeah, I know what it was I was going to say. When I got out of med school, you know, not being able to sleep was not considered such a big deal. Yeah, it drained your energy. It affected you emotionally and so forth. And then the research started coming out that your organ systems actually deteriorate from lack of proper sleep. So it is, as you say, it's a major disorder. It's a very common disorder. And people need to address it.
Yes, and your immune system gets compromised. I mean, this is a major issue to pay attention to. And, you know, it's not like having a broken leg or a festering sore that is something concrete. People dismiss and minimize sleep disorders and just, you know, go out and buy over-the-counter pills. So I'm very glad that you say that, because people need to hear. This is something very serious to pay attention to.
Right. All right, Dr. Wish, thank you so much. Okay, and let's, I love talking to you, and good luck for the next month. You know, if the first, you know, like my wife was saying the other day, you know, if the next 27 days are like the last 27.
Whoa.
Oh, you know, something, I don't have a calendar in front of me. I don't know when the third week in March occurs because we might be out of town. So I'll have to look up my calendar, and if we have a chance, we can possibly readjust that date.
Right. Sounds okay. Good. Well, let me know. Let me know. Okay. All right.
Yeah,
do that.
I'll take a look.
All right.
Okay.
So
we'll have a very good month, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you, pal. Thank you so much. All right. Take care of yourself.
All right. It's a pleasure. All right. Bye-bye now.
Yeah. Bye-bye. All right. You've been listening to the Are You Crazy show here on the Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio Station, and with Dr. Zaki McGill and me, John Case. I just look forward to this. Otherwise, I would meditate through the entire hour. We can't do that on the radio. Anyway, Zaki, so give me a little more update about what all the places I should be going the next 2 or 3 days.
Okay. Midweek meeting is in Martinsburg tonight at 7 p.m., 106 North Tennessee Avenue, if you want a progressive religious experience. Tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. is the Senator Capito's mobile town hall at the Jefferson County Senior Center on West 5th Street in Ranson. That's Thursday.
A mobile town hall. So drawing on the experience of other Republican town halls, she's got a quick exit in case there's a security.
No, I don't even think she's going to be there. It's going to it's going to be an aide. She has these legislative aides going fanning out all over the state
proxies
to do these mobiles. Yeah.
So in case there's any gunfire, she can somebody else.
Yeah, none of them want to be caught on film like Chavitz in Utah was.
Yeah, I don't know. What the hell?
They're avoiding that. Yeah. And then the big things coming up are, you know, you really ought to go on Facebook. There's Vigilance Shepherdstown, Vigilance Jefferson County, United and Diverse out of Martinsburg, NAACP, March 1st, Wednesday night, 5:30 to 8, right here in Shepherdstown, is a progressive confluence called March 1st, March Forward.
That's a fair. Yeah, I'm going to go to that.
It's a fair. Come and find out who in your community is already organized in the resistance. And then on March 4th, we're organizing a unity, peace and unity gathering in Martinsburg as a presence in town. Peaceful presence with American flags, peace flags, rainbow flags.
We're going to have a dinner that night to raise money for people to go to the spring lobbying weekend that Friends National Committee on Legislation is doing.
Okay.
On the 18th and 19th, I believe. Okay. They're focusing on health care this year.
Okay.
So, sounds good. It costs about $200 to pay your expenses, hotel, whatever, there. But they train you for 2 days and then send you in to strategically talk to, hopefully, vulnerable senators and or congressmen on this matter. I'm sure they're going to be targeting Capito. She's been saying all kinds of meaningless and non-committal things about healthcare. So I got a letter from her the other day. I read it aloud to Carol to make sure I was not crazy in thinking that it meant absolutely nothing.
Right.
But it reminded me when I was being trained on how to negotiate labor contracts by Jim Mattis. And he said, he gave me an example of a perfectly constructed language in a labor agreement. It was a big, long paragraph on management rights. And I read it, and I said, I can't figure out for the hell of me what it means. He says, that's a good contract.
Wow.
Because it means whatever you got the force to implement, you know?
Right.
It means whatever you can persuade somebody it means. Because it could mean anything, right? And which is what happens when you and the company can't agree.
Right.
But you got to have a contract. And so you write a paradox into your legal document. But anyway, welcome to the real world. Instead of the crazy one.
So that's,
Take care of
on Facebook.
All right, take care of each other, everybody. It's late, but everything comes next.